It's hard for me to summarize how I feel about my time here at church. It's also hard to express how thankful I am for the friendship and generosity you've given me. And if you'd asked me to describe in a word how I've come to regard the people of this church, I'd have to say that each of you is a gift. You've been a gift to me. In preparing to become a Unitarian minister, I feel so fortunate to boast that I've had many wonderful and formative experiences. Chief among them has been serving this church. And I assume that since this is my last sermon as the intern minister, you expect me to comment on a few of my observations about this church and my time here. And I promise to get to that. But ministry, I'll have you know, isn't about the minister. Ministry is about you, the people. So for whatever it's worth, I dedicate all that is meaningful in my heart and heartfelt in my words this morning to each and every one of you. In full disclosure, I haven't always wanted to be a minister. There are other meaningful careers that I could and I possibly should consider going into. I have a sneaking suspicion that I'd be a pretty good mailman. I think I look pretty good in blue. And I have nothing wrong with wearing shorts every day to work. I also daydream about being a winemaker because it'd save me some money. And every once in a while, I sing in the shower because I secretly prepare to audition for the opera one day. But as fate would have it, I became a minister. And each of you here, in one way or another, is a part of this long and strange journey I've been on for more than a decade. To acknowledge that becoming a Unitarian minister takes about a decade is another way of saying that I'm not going to get 1 minute of that time back. It's all gone. Through the span of time that it took me to become a minister, I moved across the country. I graduated from college. I got married. I became a father. I started and finished seminary, and those are just the biggies. It seems like just yesterday I was changing my daughter's diapers and rocking her to sleep, when in reality she'll soon be 5 years old. And it feels like just yesterday I walked down this very aisle and committed myself in marriage to my wife, even though we've been together for nearly 7 years. Throughout my formation, I've been questioned about my decision to become a minister frequently, and probably for good reason. But as a defense mechanism, I tend to underplay big decisions and events. It took becoming a minister for me to realize how special it is for a child to be born, how special it is for two people to join together in marriage, and for an individual to decide on a career. Those aren't the kind of things most people take lightly. They're the kinds of things that most of us regard as being set apart, remarkable even, and defining of who we are. If you think about it, there's no such thing as a child simply being born. There's no such thing as two people falling in love and simply dedicating their lives to each other. There are moments in each of our lives that merit a celebration, moments in time that must be set apart to acknowledge the boldness and the bravery and the audacity of your life and the choices you make. One of the gifts of being a minister is that people invite me into those most precious, tender, and meaningful moments. Over the course of my internship, I have officiated the wedding of two members of this congregation. And I have also sat in hospital rooms while people wrestled with a new diagnosis. I've gone into many of your homes. I've sat at your tables, and I've listened to you share stories of your past and visions of your future. And I have memorialized members of this church that have died. The greatest aspect of being a minister is that when certain occasions arise, people and families grant me the privilege of sanctifying them, trusting me to render a moment in time holy and set apart. Regardless of my determination and abilities as a minister, without the risk this congregation took to call me as its intern minister, I would never truly know the depth of responsibility required of any minister worth their salt. By selecting me to serve as the 20th Lewis ministerial intern, you granted me access into something far larger and meaningful than I can ever fully know. And as scandalous as it may sound, I believe that when someone professes a certain faith, they join a cloud of saints that have gone before, a cloud of witnesses that they will one day join. And I truly believe that the great majority of people that have professed this unique religious tradition, Unitarian Universalism, a marvelous collection of individuals indeed, their historic efforts mingle with each of our lives. And by bravely professing faith in an era that is increasingly suspicious of organized religion, you join in the ongoing labor of defining what humankind's purpose should and must be. You get to redefine what it means to possess the power to shape a future that will be inherited by people yet to be. And you get to define what it means to live and die. Now, I realize that some of you may think that my words sound high-flown. But trust me when I say that I didn't spend a decade of my life to become a minister because I thought that it'd be easy. I became a minister because I believe in the power of people. I believe in the power of people to be suspicious of what they've been told, to look deep within their hearts and discover what it means to live in a world of justice, equity, and peace. I believe in the power of heart. I trust that everyday people can have an impact on their immediate world, that when they set their minds to it, they will soon learn that it is in their power to initiate change, to usher in greater equality, and participate in healing. And with the power to create change for the better, each of us is well aware of the choice to do nothing, to rest mindlessly in complacency. But my guess is that each of you are here because of a series of choices you made from the time you woke up to this very moment. And I'll go so far as to assume that many of you choose to believe that we, human beings, have a responsibility to each other. And a feature of this church's ministry is its commitment to the edification of young ministers. That, too, is a bold choice. It costs a lot of money, and it's risky. Nevertheless, you chose to grant me access into your pulpit, your governance, and your religious and personal lives. Around this time last year, I met with a marvelous group of people who interviewed me, and they tested to see whether or not I was fit enough to serve in this prestigious position, one of two endowed ministerial internships in the entire nation. And their choice to bring me here has literally changed my life. And trust me, I am better for having received guidance, mentoring, and friendship from the intern committee. I want to express my deepest, deepest gratitude to Joanne Bolton, Jeff Carey, Chuck Eby, Joan Kindleberger, Jerry McAdams, Susan Miller, Jeanette Myers, and Carol Watson. Not only did these people help me better understand what's required of a minister, they showered me with the gifts of affection, attention, and much-needed criticism. But more than that, they treated me like I am someone special. And small-town working-class kids like me don't get that kind of attention all the time. I'd also like to extend a very special thanks to the office staff, Yvette Clemens and Miss Augie Underwood. Without their humor and hard work, I would have been lost at least a dozen times. I'd also like to thank Earl Naylor, the wonderful organist. His humor and artistry made each Sunday that I preached far more beautiful and enjoyable. There's also the church custodian, Elliot Smith, Joel Knapp, the music director, Rhonda Bergler, the religious education assistant. But very near and dear to my heart are the ministers of this congregation, Reverend Thomas Perchlick and Lynn Hunt. I think you all know that this has been a unique year here at this church. And without their guidance, care, and support, I don't know that I would have made it out in one piece. Thomas's Zen style of ministry, his dedication to the people of this church, his dedication to his wife, his children, and his grandchild, not to mention his commitment to colleagues and friends, gives me something to strive for. And Lynn's tireless dedication to advocating for people on the margins humbles and inspires me. I'd also like to lift up my wife, Sarah. In the midst of learning how to be a minister's wife, she has been a devoted mother to our daughter, Eleanor, a school teacher, an advocate for individuals with disabilities, a graduate student, an aunt, sister, and friend to hundreds of people around the world. Not only did she manage to pull it off in her characteristic style, she looked good doing it. And I'd also like to mention that she edited down each and every one of my sermons, a feat which all of you should be very happy for. I offer all of this gratitude to say that without these people, and many of you here in this room, I know that I wouldn't last another year as a minister. Ministry is about people. Ministry is about relationships. Still yet, Even under the best circumstances, I cannot know what the future of my ministry will be like. And when you add it all up, the expectations for modern ministers, it's just terrifying. As a further matter, like many careers, ministry has its own set of myths, and I've spent a considerable amount of time trying to separate those myths from reality. On the one hand, ministers are supposed to be humble but profound, accessible but cosmopolitan, smart but not too smart, boldly prophetic but coolly rational. We're supposed to smile all the time, know everyone's name, and dress stylishly but not too flashy. As an act of resistance, I've come to the conclusion that ministers just aren't that special. We're people, just like laborers, lawyers, politicians, professors, doctors, teachers, and grocers, all of which have their own set of myths they must overcome or they will fall victim to them as well. The reading from Jeremiah captures one grand vision of ministry set forth in the Hebrew Bible. The child that would become one of Israel's greatest prophets was fashioned into a minister while he was still in his mother's womb. On the other hand, you have Reinhold Niebuhr's confession that rings true to my own experience. Most of you have taught me far more than I could ever teach you. That, mixed with the duty I feel as a minister, results in feelings of inadequacy, doubt, and fear. I trust those feelings, though. I trust that it keeps me self-aware. I trust that it keeps me humble and focused. It's also a constant reminder that doing church isn't easy. And if ever you find a minister that claims doing church work is easy, do yourself a favor and run away. It's not supposed to be easy, and that's the point. Ministry is about living and dying, and it's about making space of the time in between. Ministry is about growing and learning. It's about passion and disappointment. It's about mistakes and reconciliation. But my experience has taught me that when you commit to doing ministry and actively participate in the life of a church, you soon realize that the miraculous occurs all the time. During my time here, I've had conversations with members of this storied congregation that remind me of the fact that there are saints in our midst. I met a man who was raised to regard Jews as less than human, but early into his adulthood, he served in the Army during World War II. Following orders to secure a camp in Upper Bavaria, this man was one of the soldiers that aided in the liberation of the prisoners at the Dachau concentration camp. That day, he watched 30,000 Jews and political prisoners restored to freedom and dignity. And never again could he understand how someone can regard anyone as less than human. And then he went on to spend the rest of his life aiding in the security of freedom, justice, and equality for people all over the world. I met another man that somehow managed to live 79 years without offending a single person. He lived a quiet, humble life of the mind, and when he died, he left not even one wish, just a trail of friends that struggled to convey just how much he meant to them. And I married a couple that spends their lives advocating for those on the margins of our society, forgoing status and substantially more money. The husband, after graduating from medical school, chose to dedicate his career as serving as a physician in a veterans hospital. His wife gives much of her free time to the youth and young adults of this church, mentoring, volunteering, and gifting of her time and talents, because she believes that the world can and will be made better by compassionate activism. Now, trust me when I say I could go on and on, but I've got tickets to the Cardinals game, so I'm going to wrap this up. I once heard a presidential historian describe human greatness like this: greatness is when we transcend the natural limitations with which we're all born to benefit the good of us all. One of the greatest gifts I received during my time here is to move in the orbit of so many people who transcend the natural limitations with which we're all born. And so, as my final sermon illustration, I'll leave you with this. During my second year of seminary, I asked my professor of preaching and worship this question: what is the hardest thing for ministers to do? And this is what he said: to wake up each and every day and serve alongside people who make mistakes, who challenge you, who frustrate you, surprise and inspire you, then to rise each Sunday in a world filled with tragedy and possibility, and behold the gathered collection of people there in front of you, and love them. You've been a gift to me, dear friends. Thank you. I love you.